I'm so excited to introduce you all to Lamina Animals. Her ethos around her products is honestly just inspiring. I first came across Charlotte when she started following my Facebook page, and I basically just stalked her Facebook page and was blown away by how in-depth she goes to research her materials. She really wants to make a difference. You will gain so much knowledge at the end of this podcast, and I really think you'll be inspired too. Hi, Charlotte. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Kerry. It's lovely to be here today.
So we've been chatting behind the scenes for about 20 minutes, having a grand old time. So I've got to know you a little bit better now, which is great. But why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about your business and why you decided to start it?
Okay, so Lamina Animal was born in Melbourne, actually, in Australia, just a little bit over a year ago when I took home a whippet who was 3 years old called Slania, Mr. Frady Knickers, actually, we called him. He was very anxious. He'd come from the country and into the city. And so everybody, I was like, you know, training this dog constantly, looking for things for training. And I basically, everything on the market was made of plastic or had plastic in it, even like the most luxurious products, contained plastic. And I thought, you know, the lifespan of a dog is about 12 to 16 years, dare I say it. And over that kind of that time, we use quite a few collars and leads and stuff. They're kind of, there's a built-in obsolescence to them. And so basically they just either go to landfill or, you know, they get burnt or, so that plastic is floating around in our oceans. And there was nothing, there was really literally nothing that I could find except for one product, I think, in Germany that, you know, the carbon miles would have been huge to fly to Australia that was made of hemp. So I kind of started making my own out of linen, and people kind of saw them as I was walking Slania and taking him, you know, around the block and doing training sessions with him, and said, you know, wow, where did you get those? And I was like, well, I made them. And so the idea of Lamina kind of grew from there.
Oh, that's amazing. I think that's how a lot of small dog businesses seem to be starting, is that somebody's passion is on their own dog, and then they kind of, people are like, oh, well, I like that too. So can I just ask, where does the name Lamina come from?
So Lamina comes from two places. It was a 2 o'clock in the morning kind of, oh my goodness. It really was. So Lamina is animal backwards. And so I know, sometimes people see it immediately and other people kind of like, oh, hang on, is this... And the other thing is that because in my previous life, quote unquote, I was a registered nurse and I worked in theatre, mainly in spines. And Lamina is actually a nod in some ways to my old life, as Lamina is a part of the spine. So it's kind of like a twofold, really, like a nod to my old life and a nod to my new life. And I remember Googling it. Must have been around May last year, and going, how come nobody's done this for an animal product? So yeah, it was like, so yeah, it's fun watching people kind of go, oh, or when I say, you know, like they haven't noticed because they're, you know, busy looking at the logo going, oh, it's a wolf. And then they go, oh my goodness, this is like animal backwards. I'm like, yeah. Or when I'm spelling it out over the internet, and goes, Lamina, animal backwards, and then animal, and they're like, oh great. So,
but the other nice thing about it is now that you've said it, nobody will forget.
That's right. Well, hopefully.
So your, as I said, I've been reading about your business and your passion for, like, eco-friendly and sustainability really shines through. Did it start with the dog products, or did it come before that?
I think for me, it's been a very long journey, actually, and one that I never get right, because we're not perfect as human beings. But I think it started kind of when I moved to London in 97, excuse me, and lived with my sister, excuse me, who's 12, 11 and a half, according to her, but 12 years older than me. We used to load up the car at the end of the week with bottles and all sorts of stuff and take it to Sainsbury's or Tesco or wherever we were going and do our recycling and, you know, all that sort of stuff, take our shopping bags. And then when I moved back to New Zealand in 2000, I think what happened for me was I started really looking at the impact that we had on the planet. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that it was like when, you know, climate change had just been announced, and I'm a really big early adopter of technology and new systems. And I think I kind of found a path of being kind of green, but technologically green as well at the same time. So it kind of led to me using products that that I probably wouldn't have used normally, from a place called the Eco Store, which is a place in New Zealand. They make cleaning products and soaps and stuff like that. So okay. It's been a really long journey. They also supplied things like compostable bags for rubbish and, you know, systems for composting meat and worm farms and stuff like that. So I had a worm farm and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I've kind of taken that philosophy with me. So I think I really didn't, even I didn't have kind of a hold on the impact that plastic has until probably about 5 years ago, when I really started doing my research on, you know, on, I saw an article about each plastic bottle that we have water in takes 5 litres of water, you know, to actually manufacture, plus the petroleum.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, what's this all about? So that kind of led to more research about the impact that plastic has. And also the fact that I learned that water is not a renewable resource, even though we think it is. Like, it falls from the sky and we, you know, we drink it and, you know, we can recycle it and, you know, the planet's covered in it. But it's actually not, we're running out of it. So it was, yeah. Those sorts of pieces of information, I think, because I'm autistic, I grab onto and then I go down this some rabbit hole of, you know, a year later I emerge and go, okay, so this is a problem that I have to do something about.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't get it right. And I especially don't get it right living in the UK where, it, you know, I mean,
impossible to avoid.
It's almost impossible to go to the supermarket or to buy anything that hasn't got plastic in it, or, you know, and they're saying that we're ingesting grams and grams of plastic in our food and our water every day anyway. So, you know, I think the other reason behind Lamina was to actually not only uphold that philosophy that I've lived to for a long time, but also to actually bring something to market that lessened that impact on a huge, I mean, the pet industry globally is £7 billion a year, mm-hmm. which is a lot of money when you think about it. And about a third of that is used on accessories.
Yeah.
And with most of them having plastic in it, that's a lot of plastic that can be avoided. So
I think
a long way, that's an answer to your question. Sorry.
No, I think it's what a lot of people are starting to come to the conclusion of, is that we all need to make a slight difference. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, just something like using milk bottles instead of plastic.
Oh, yeah.
Every single little thing is going to help, like, lessen this huge, huge impact that we're having. And it terrifies me. I watched the whole Hugh Fearnley Whittingston thing. I can't pronounce his name. but that one street, the amount of plastic, I don't know if you saw it, was just terrifying. It was terrifying. Yeah. And you try and make this difference. But as you said, you go to the supermarket and your choices are taken away because everything's wrapped. Anyway,
and, I mean, even if you were to unwrap it as a, you know, an everyday activism kind of act, if you're unwrapping it and leaving it in the supermarket, then it still has to go somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have to pick it up and put it in the bin. And a lot of people have forgotten the recycling, kind of what can and can't be recycled. So can a number one be recycled? Is a seven recyclable? Those sorts of things. I have that kind of information on the website.
Yes, I saw, actually. I found it really useful.
I think it's really important to remind ourselves that when you're picking up something and it's in plastic and you think, oh, I can put it in the recycling bin, but actually quite often you can't, because it can't be, there's a finite amount of times certain plastics can be recycled, and most of the time it goes to landfill anyway. So,
and then we don't even know if it's actually going abroad. It's right. Just ridiculous.
That's right. So, you know, why not let's just get rid of single-use plastic?
Exactly. Yeah. Take away that problem. So, sorry, yeah, we're both obviously quite passionate about this. it's not just about reducing plastic, it's about having sustainable materials, and you want to know where your materials are coming from, and then that they're actually completely ecologically friendly. So where do you source your materials for your products?
Okay, so all of the products that we make are handmade, and at the moment by me, using ethically sourced and sustainable materials. And they're chosen for their durability and their sustainability. So mostly we use in the products linen, which is sourced from Merchant and Mills. It's an English company, and their linen is grown and in Lithuania. So it's flax. Linen is made from flax, which is the most sustainable kind of fabric that you can use. Okay. It uses very little water. It's abundant. It grows in just about every country. So for me in New Zealand, it's one of our kind of our sacred plants called harakeke. It's used by the Maori people to actually weave clothes and bags. All sorts of amazing things. So I've grown up around it. It's in everybody's garden. It's almost like a pest, but very beautiful, and it attracts beautiful birds and bees, so it's really good for nature. The mills that they have in Lithuania are actually green powered, so two of the mills are completely green powered, and the dyes that they use are Oeko certified, so they're certified by a board that makes sure that the conditions that they're grown and harvested and manufactured under are actually guided by the Sustainable Development Goals, and that there aren't any toxic chemicals, because everything's chemicals, toxic chemicals used in the production. So we collaborate really closely with local businesses. The labels are made from linen by an amazing woman called Lynn Abraham. She's based in the Lake District, I believe. Please don't let me, Lynn, if I got that wrong. And she's a textile and ceramic artist, and she's been awarded a local environmental award since 2011 for working with natural fibres.
Amazing.
So, she prints all my labels onto linen. We also I shop at a place called Grace Stitch, which actually walk to most days, like a 40-minute walk in Islington, and they supply my cotton, which comes from Turkey, I believe, and that again is Oeko and got certified, so it's organic, and the production, because so lots of cotton is really bad, mm-hmm. because of the water and the chemicals, but some cotton is actually okay. So I make sure that I know where it's coming from, and then I also allow the consumer to know where it's coming from.
Amazing.
I believe by being transparent, I'm able to be as ethical as possible. So I don't always get it right, and sometimes I can't find out. And so either I will be open and honest about that. Mm-hmm. The wax that I use in the pore balm at the moment, I could get it organic from America, but the carbon from flying it to the UK. So I get it from a company called Aromantic, which is UK based, and they've got a 20-year history of supplying organic stuff, and they're working on it. So it's about, you know, supporting small business, but also being as open as possible with where things came from.
I'm so impressed at the amount of research that you've done. You've not let anything I think a lot of people are taking shortcuts with business nowadays, whereas you're just kind of going, no, this is my ethos and I am sticking to it, even if it means a lot more time and a lot more resources and a lot more research. I think that's amazing.
And a lot more exhaustion. Yeah. I think, to be perfectly honest, I mean, there's a really fine line between not having the time and greenwashing. And so for me, the fact that I can say where things are and that I'm open about those things. Hopefully I'm not seen as a small business that's trying to greenwash anything mm-hmm. and actually say that we are something that we're not. But also it is a very long process. It's taken a year, and also moving back to the UK 9 months ago, I had to restart the whole, where do I get things from? Because I had suppliers in Australia, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's been a very big journey, and it's not one that I will always get right. And it's one that I will always look at. So I keep pestering people like Merchant and Mills. I want the certificates, and I want this, and I want to be able to. So, you know, it's about partnering with people who have the same philosophy. And
yeah.
That's taken a lot of time. So, you know, and hopefully it will show other companies, especially bigger companies, that it is possible. I mean, I'm just a one-woman show with very little funding. So, you know, for me, if I can do it, it is possible, but it is overwhelming. So
yeah,
you know, and I'm always happy to chat with people about that.
Amazing. We could go
again all day. Not bore them.
You're really quite a new company, and we basically met because I think you started following my page on Facebook.
I did, mainly for your whippets, I have to confess.
I'm not offended, that's most people. but what has been the best thing about creating your own business so far?
I think the best thing is actually the connections that you make with people who are like-minded, but also the opportunity that you get to encourage other people to make those small changes that are necessary. Like, you know, having a conversation with somebody the other day about, you know, their toothbrush, just their toothbrush. And I was like, but we throw our toothbrushes away. And, you know, I use a bamboo toothbrush, mm-hmm. and showing them my toothbrush and saying, you know, like, my teeth are in really good condition for a woman my age. You know, and even the dentist says that. And, you know, the things that we've been sold by big companies like Oral-B and stuff like that, you know, like, we need mouthwash, we need to floss, we need to do all these things. And it's not true, but there are alternatives. And it's actually, you know, it takes a lot of research to make these changes. Mm-hmm. So it's about, I think the best thing is coming in contact with people who want to make these changes, but they have no idea where to start, mm-hmm. you know, and also seeing them kind of make those changes and celebrate those changes with them, but also being able to make connections with small business and promote those businesses. So, you know, I think because together we're stronger rather than, you know, being competitive, which is what we've been taught for so long. Businesses, it's about, you know, I make a connection with somebody like you, I promote you on my website because it means that other people will find you, and then we're stronger together, not only as women but also as small business owners and also as eco-friendly business owners and people that, you know, can actually encourage other people to come on this journey, because it's daunting. It's really daunting when you look at it. It's like, you know, a huge cluster of, you know, I could swear that I'm not going to, but it's a huge cluster of, you know, where do I start?
Yeah.
And it's overwhelming. So mm-hmm. I think that's the most joyous thing of launching Lamina, really.
I have to, I agree with you on that. When I started sort of photography in general about 10 years ago, I was, you know, it was very much people were, they didn't give away information of the photographers, they were very secretive, and gradually I've started to come across photographers who it's more about, like you said, making those connections. But now I'm not just photographers, it's like businesses like you. I've worked with other small businesses. You've probably seen like Kerry from the Dog and I, who's trying to do the whole movement on getting rid of dog shampoo and like redoing it with dog soap. And I now feel like I'm part of an office almost, because I've got all these ladies and the occasional gent who are also small businesses that we can bounce ideas off. And it's just so lovely to have that, like you said, those connections.
Well, it's like a hive, isn't it, really? And without a queen, obviously, and we're all working, but we're all supporting each other, all off finding the pollen and coming back. It's kind of like that analogy for me that, you know, together we make the honey, and if there's one of us out somewhere in the cold, you know, they're like, they'll come and find you and do a little dance or something like that, you know? Like that romantic, I think it's the autistic part of me, but you know,
I love that.
And I'm kind of like, oh yeah, bees do good, don't they, really? You know, we're not so good for the bees, but the bees do pretty good if we leave them alone, really.
Yeah,
and they're doing their thing and they kind of do their little dances, and I think that's what we are. We're all kind of like doing our little dance, and suddenly another bee will come over and go, hey, that's a sustainability dance. And it's like, yeah, it is. Come and join us, bee. So, you know, it's really about being happy in your workflow. I mean, they say, you know, choose something that you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Well, that's not true. I love it. And I work every day of my life, sometimes 18 hours, 20 hours. But I love it. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved being a nurse. Don't get me wrong. I loved being a nurse. But I think I can make more change this way. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can still care for people. I can still look after people. I can still give people advice and do. But I think it's I'm becoming part of a bigger hive, a family of people who want to be the change, who want, you know, that they want to see, that they, you know, and I think that's the joy of connecting with people like you and, you know, things like Ethical Hour or the partners that we do have. So, I do a little shout out because I think that it's really important, but I'm insured by Ethical and Insurance Services, and they give up to 25% of your policy back to charity.
Amazing.
So mine's Lion Aid this year, because they're so underfunded. The poo bags that I have are from EcoVibe, so they're made completely from cornstarch and compostable, mm-hmm. which everybody asks me about, and I'm like, no, you don't put it in your normal compost. Get some worm farms. And, you know, or put them, dig a hole in the garden, because it's just dog poo, really. You know, we could talk about raw diet, but, you know, I could go on all day about that. And I think, you know, the other one is the Crop Club. So they teach people how to garden in small spaces, and they support children to do that, and they go out and they educate and stuff like that. So it's becoming part of a bigger hive that then, you know, we can share the joy and
and spread the knowledge.
It's quite tempting, really, isn't it? You know, being full of a community that, you know, love each other and you know, want to support you.
It's becoming such a, it's like there's this whole movement of entrepreneurs who also are really shouting about the fact that they want to do some good. So you've only been going for about a year, did you say?
Well, the idea's been open for a year, and lots of research, and I launched on the 25th of May, so that was, I don't know, there wasn't a party or anything, so it kind of felt like a bit of a whoop. But it, you know, the products were loaded onto the website and it went live. Wow. And all that kind of thing. So so it's just, it's really a baby a baby business.
So what do you think, what is your next plan for Lamina Animals? Lamina Animals, now I'm seeing it all the time.
I don't know, but you see, never unsee it. It's like one of those memes, you know. I think for me, the next thing that I'm working on is securing some funding. So I'm working on a crowdsourcing kind of grant application at the moment. I really want, all of my products are tree nut free. And the reason for that is there's so many products on the market, again, that have animal products. So all of my products are vegan. So they have a lot of paw balms out that have like beeswax and stuff like that in it. So I wanted something that could be used by vegan, but also I wanted something that could be used around children or people with sensitivities. And a lot of people have sensitivities to tree nuts and peanuts, which are different things. Peanuts are legumes, but they're related. So I don't use anything but rice wax in my products that could, you know, and so it's edible, it's lick safe for children, and it's lick safe for dogs, and you can use it in pregnancy with caution. You know, anything that's not us, mm-hmm. you know, non-self, you need caution. So I have, you know, I have warnings about that on the website. But for me, the next step is coming out with a tree nut free, and I've almost perfected the recipe. They're pretty scrumptious, made out of three ingredients, completely organic. And I'd like to partner with Oddbox London or some similar place that collects vegetables and fruit that would otherwise be thrown away because they're not perfect, mm-hmm. which I can't comprehend in my life, but and actually use their products and steel cut oats basically to produce a biscuit, so a treat, because we all know that treats are great training products,
yeah,
but also something that, you know, if your kid gets into them, which is, you know, quite possible, that it's going to be okay for them to eat. And so that's the next thing.
Ooh,
and
amazing.
More partnerships, I think, really. At the moment, I've got a pop-up store in Shoreditch in London, and every time you buy a product there, you get a Crop Club magic dust bag, so that you can sprinkle some magic dust when you're walking a dog and watch the wildflowers grow on your.
Oh,
your
I love room. That idea!
Yeah.
I
so
love
it's things like that. That's in the pipeline.
Oh, amazing! Okay. So they are all of my sort of business related questions. Now we're on to the fun stuff.
No.
We're going to go on to, it's quite fun. It's a quick fire round that I do with my podcast guests because it's it just gets the listeners to know a little bit more about you just as a person. All I say is you don't need to think about it too much. Sometimes it leads on to a conversation and that's fine. Right, first quickfire question. I think this is going to be an easy one for you. It's fine. Beach or city?
Oh, beach, really. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Nature.
Mm. Yeah. Morning or night?
Oh, definitely night.
Really?
I'm so much more productive. I mean, I love the morning. It's beautiful, but the nighttime is just, you know, it's something romantic about it, and I'm much more productive.
I find that fascinating. People are so different. I'm like on fire in the morning, and then in the evening, it's like, oh no.
My mother was like that, 5 o'clock in the morning, being wide awake, you know, getting up and doing things. And she used to come and drag the duvet off us and run away. And we were just like, in the morning. Like, you know, I think about 10:30, 11, my brain goes, okay, now we can wake up. I'm like, okay, you know, and I've already done a million things, but it's like, you know, oh okay, we're awake.
Okay. Well, no wonder you don't like mornings if your mum was ripping the duvet off at 5 a.m. Are you a sweet or savoury person?
Savoury. I love savoury dishes very much.
If you had your favourite day, what would it be in three words?
Hours walking whippets.
If I didn't love you before, which I did, I love you even more.
But unfortunately, being autistic, I just have to tell you. So, yeah, hours walking whippets. Yeah.
Amazing. That should be your, like, little...
In bed with somewhere. Whippets.
Yeah.
You know, in bed with whippets.
One morning and afternoon in three words.
with it.
And who is your biggest inspiration?
This is very controversial. Elon Musk. I know. He's a genius, and he should stay off the Twitter, and because he's autistic, and he becomes overwhelmed. And I think that's what most people don't understand about us is that, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to fit in, so masking and mirroring and doing, it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And so he wants to do something. I mean, he made the patents for the Tesla cars completely public knowledge, mm-hmm. you know, open source. All these things he's done are fantastic. But the problem is that we melt down when we get overwhelmed. And there's criticism for people who are in business, always. I mean, it doesn't make wise choices, but really, who can hold their hand up and say that they do? You know, nobody's perfect.
No, absolutely not. And I think actually he's being really brave in the fact that he's still doing it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, one of the people who I admire, who I think has a form of autism, is Chris Packham.
Oh, I love him. I love him so much. You know, he's always, you know, and he's a swearer, which I love. People send him poo in the post and he swears to them about it. And I'm like, yeah, Chris, get on it.
He has a sense of humour about it as well, though.
That's what I love, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to laugh, you cry.
Yeah, exactly. He just doesn't seem afraid anymore. I don't know if he was before, but he's just very... He has an opinion and he voices it, which I think is really brave, especially because not everybody will agree with you. This is going to be an interesting one for you.
Oh, yes.
What is your spirit animal?
I would like to say a wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I see them as loners, really. And I think I love being with people. I really do. But I treasure being alone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're always on the move and they're always kind of, you know, hunting for something, whether it be food or shelter. And I think that's really sums up my life. But my real spirit animal is a sighthound. What do they do? I mean, you know, they love you. They're happy to see you. They're interested in food and they want to sleep a lot.
Yep, that's pretty much summed it up.
And they sound good. I mean, yeah. You know, what more do
you ask for? What is your most used word or phrase?
I mean, there might be children listening to this.
I doubt it.
You never know. I don't know. Life's a roller coaster, really. And I think my most used phrase is, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It came, and I'd like to honour a friend of mine who is no longer with us as of last year, who basically kicked me up the bum last year and gave me the strength, I think, to start the journey of coming here. And one of the things that he said a lot was, it is what it is, Charlotte. You know, like I'd be crying about something or, you know, frustrated or, you know, and he'd just sit there and go, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. I say it a lot, either out loud or I say it in my head, you know, like, you know, you bust a needle sewing something and, you know, the autistic in me would go and have a meltdown. And now I just go, it is what it is.
Amazing. I think that's a beautiful thing to remember a friend by as well, is just every time you say it, it's going to be a memory.
Very much so.
Last but not least,
uh-oh.
Your pet hate.
Eco-perfectionism, I think.
Ooh, okay, that sounds very highbrow.
I think it is my pet hate. It's generally covered by greenwashing as well. So
you mentioned this earlier and I don't know what it is, sorry.
Greenwashing is something that companies like Nestle and Amazon and all those kind of companies, which I hate and boycott for very good reasons. I remember what Nestle did in the 90s. And it's about distracting people from the horror of what you actually do environmentally, by actually doing something that looks green. Right. And because it's going on at the moment with the Boho 1 pound bikini, you know, it's like, but we've launched the sustainability range. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. And it does take a lot of time to change a business model, but you've got a range, but does that follow the SDGs on, you know, on equality or inequalities or gender equality or, you know, consumption and production or all those sorts of things? What are you actually doing? It's kind of like putting up a mirror and saying, well, smoking mirrors and saying, yeah, we're really environmentally friendly because we've got the sustainability range, but out the back end you're burning carbon and fossil fuels, and, you know, and nobody knows about it because you're doing it under a different name, or, you know. So greenwashing is appearing to be green, which is something that I'm trying to be you know, the other side of by being open in my supply chain. And I think a lot of businesses are now actually adopting that as a model. My pet hate is kind of the reverse of that, is eco-perfectionism, and they tie in really well together. Is, you know, I'm so perfect in my eco, you know, friendly that, you know, I do everything right. Like, I sleep on natural fibers, and I get up and I, you know, I used recycled water. You know, I mean, it's possible. It really is possible. But you have to have a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of support. And, you know, it, not everybody can achieve it. So what it does is actually push people away from actually doing anything at all. Mm-hmm. And it's a lie. Mm-hmm. And I that is my pet hate. It's like, you know, I'm not going to delete those images of me years ago smoking, because, you know, I only gave up smoking 10 months ago. I'm not, you know, cigarette butts, absolutely terrible for the planet. I have given up, but I'm not going to say that I never smoked.
Yeah.
You know, I'm no angel. And I think it's about admitting that we're not, admitting that we're human, that we're imperfect, that this eco-perfectionism isn't attainable, because it makes it unattainable. You know, if you're perfect on your social media, you're perfect in your company, you're perfect in your everyday life, you know, other people look at you and go, either, well, they see the hypocrisy, but also it makes them just go, I'm not even going to try, because there's no way I could possibly achieve that.
Yeah, so this is what we were talking about earlier, actually, isn't it? It's trying to let people know that even one small thing can change so much. Mm. So, like, having that reusable coffee cup will, like, save 3,000 unreusable coffee cups in 2 years, and that's a huge amount. And then if you do that over a lifetime, that's making a huge difference.
That's right. So,
yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Using it, that's the other thing, I think.
What was that?
Having it and using it is, yes, the other thing, because I see a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon, and you know, that sounds horrible, but it's not meant to be. I see a lot of people going, I've got my keep cup, and I'm like, do you use it though?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot today, or it's at home, and it's like, well, you know, I've got one that folds down to nothing.
That's made out of silicone. They're so good.
Because, you know, quite often I was guilty of leaving my keep cup, because I'd look at it and go, oh, it's really big, doesn't fit in my bag. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's about finding ways, but it's actually about using it. So yeah, it's not about eco-consumption. I think that's the huge problem that we've fallen into, is, you know, you can buy your way out of this problem. We can't buy our way out of the problem if we're not going to use them. And then if you've got a cup that you use, and then you buy another one, then you've got one that it's like, you know, it's consumption. We've got to get our head around the fact that it's, if you buy quality, if you buy something that's built to last, if you, yes, buy something that, you know, is handmade, or is, you know, has an ethos that, you know, aligns with yours, and you use it.
Well, that's the important this is the thing. So I've just actually launched my own reusable coffee cup, because I have a reusable coffee cup, but it's boring. I use it because I want to sort of not, and I won't buy a coffee out unless I have it.
Yeah.
Kind of, oh, it's so boring. Mm. But I'm doing good for the planet, so it's fine. So I've created some with my branding, because what I want to try and do is go, this is a really pretty thing, and also create a hashtag around it so that people take it out and use it all the time. Mm. And then sort of people can see it being used, and then it will hopefully influence more people to use it all the time. Yeah. And it's kind of, and people aren't, and it's making people aware. My whole thing was, you know, it's all very lovely having all these followers who have got an amazing community who are really interactive. And now it's hopefully using that as a nice influence for building and, you know, expressing views and getting people on board. So many people who weren't using it, a reusable coffee cup before, now hopefully, as you said, will actually use it.
That's right. Yeah. I saw it the other day, and the only reason I didn't buy one, Kerry, is because I've got two keep cups, and I'm like, consumer of them, and I really want one, but I can't, you know, like I've got a stormtrooper. I'm obsessed with Star Wars and always have been.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. That's a cool one.
And I also have the one that folds down for traveling, and also because my stormtrooper's glass, if I go overseas or, you know, I travel, I don't want to smash it. Or
yeah, no, absolutely.
So anyway, yeah,
Charlotte, but it's honestly been an absolute pleasure.
I've rambled.
No, I think anybody who's listening to this season two is listening to it because they want to know and learn. So I think you've given us so much food for thought. It's been absolutely amazing. You've definitely made me think a lot more. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the, like on your website and social media, so they can go and check you out.
Oh, thank you very much. So it's just laminaanimal.com. So animal backwards and then animal forwards.com. You can reach there from .co.uk, .co, all sorts of everything else, because, you know, I wanted to make it as easy as possible. From June the 21st for 2 weeks, you can physically go and have a look at the products in Shoreditch in London. And I will be doing more pop-ups, and that's on the website under pop-ups, so you can just have a look if there's one happening near you. And also my handles on across all social media is Lamina Animals, so with an S. So the website is just Lamina Animal, and social media is Lamina Animals, because Lamina Animal was already taken on one of the social medias, so it was easier. So that's where you can find me if you'd
like. Awesome. I will make sure I put all the links in the show notes as well. But again, thank you so much, and
have a
lovely evening.
I will. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such an absolute honour. Thank you.